Hi, this is Len Testa with the Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World and the Walt Disney World Today podcast. You know, we update the Unofficial Guide twice every year so that you always get the most accurate content possible. And the thing I enjoy most about doing those updates is to talk with Jim Hill about behind-the-scenes activities, what's rumored to be happening, and all the other can't-be-verified stuff in Walt Disney World. It's a couple of hours of Jim telling stories and me laughing my head off. Jim and I thought it would be fun to capture the spirit of those talks for y'all to hear, and it just so happened that we were both in the Magic Kingdom at the same time one weekend earlier this year. What you're about to hear was recorded in late May 2011. You'll recognize where we are in the park by some of the distinctive background music, too. Jim and I hope you enjoy this little tour of rumors and probably completely unverifiable innuendo. We hope you take a moment to review it on iTunes, too, and send us an email, please, if you have any suggestions for future episodes. Enjoy the show.
All right, so we're on here on Main Street. We're over in front of the new Town Square Theater, which used to be the Exposition Hall. But the problem is Americans can't spell exposition. but I do give them the credit because it's theater spelled the correct way with the ER instead of RE, which is theatre.
There you go.
Good.
Actually, the interesting piece about this building, and back in the day, I mean, this was the Gulf Hospitality House, but if all had gone according to plan in 1690 or thereabouts, this would have been Disney's first in-theme park hotel.
Really?
Dorothea Redmond actually, there's this amazing set of plans. In fact, if you pick up a copy of The Art of Walt Disney World, they actually have, a second-tier hotel, and it was going to be amazing. But more to the point, it was going to be tall enough that, that's one of the things that's kind of interesting about why this building is positioned here, and it is the height it is. So you can't see the contemporary.
Oh, nice.
So, it's deliberately the tallest building, bulk-wise, of the ones on Main Street. But yeah, this would have been the in-park hotel, but in the end, as things that were on the table that were suddenly more expensive or outside of Disney's purview, you got to remember, before Disney World opened up, Disney didn't operate any hotels.
Yeah.
That, the Rather Corporation ran the Disneyland Hotel. And in fact, for a long time, U.S. Steel was supposed to run the ones down here. They were building the Pali.
Right, in the Contemporary, right?
Yep. Yeah. And they were supposed to lease them back to Disney, and Disney was going to operate them. But eventually, Roy Disney just, to be honest, when U.S. Steel was building the hotels, it was kind of a conversation in July. It's like, yeah, we're going great. Oh, by the way, we won't be available for the October 1st opening. And one of the reasons that the budget for Walt Disney World went ridiculously over, this project was budgeted for $100 million, came in at $400 million, was that the company had to buy out U.S. Steel.
Wow.
Just, get out. So, back to Main Street.
So, are they doing anything with Tony's Town Square? It's going to stay the restaurant?
Yeah, for now, the weird thing that is, it is, it's destination dining. And right now, they are technically eyeballing, given the success of Main Street Theater, it's like, all right, so, the Disney princes are not in there forever, obviously. They're going to have their own fairy tale hall.
Right, over by Snow White, right?
Yes, so long term, it's okay. Mickey's a success. What can we do? The princesses are on that side of the building, what can we do here that's a character dining opportunity with a meet and greet thing? So they are definitely circling that idea. But as of right now, Tony Town Square, when you're making that much money, why are we doing this?
Yeah, then you need to change it. And the funny thing is that would be probably the last place in the Magic Kingdom that I would try and, Cinderella's maybe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, for the cost, actually, it'd probably be up there. But, I would prefer Liberty Tavern ahead of it and many counter services.
Mm-hmm.
Huh, interesting.
Okay.
What about the chapeau or the confectionery?
Well, I think we were talking about this the other day. Literally, this is the design here keys off of that Americans are right-handed. And, the whole notion of you walk into the park, it's Florida. You and I with our rather large foreheads. I need a hat. And it's like, oh, it's right there. And as you proceed up the street, oh, I need a snack. I just got here. Hey, the bakery's there. Or I need film for my camera.
The stuff that you need when you're coming in is on the right, and the stuff that you want on the
is the
right coming back is the souvenirs.
And then it gets even more fiendish than that. That as you come in,
if I wasn't a stockholder, I'd say that was evil. But since I am, it's brilliant, brilliant.
Well, the other thing is, when you walk in the morning, all right, you have march music. You know, they are, you know, you got 76 trombones, get your wallet out, you know, moving up the street. And the interesting thing is that you now, literally, at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon, they suddenly switch over to waltz. You know, just kind of medium tempo, like saunter, stroll.
Stay, sit, why are you going so soon?
That's right.
Stay. Hey, how's your wallet? Still good? Kind of heavy? We can light it for you.
But again, you know, what is just absolutely fascinating about this is we were, just this past weekend, got shown this amazing set of construction photos for Main Street.
Yep.
And honestly, you know, I mean, it's so obvious, but it's like the buildings themselves are just conventional buildings. Everything here that we're looking at, these are artificial facades that bump out away from the standard square rectangular structure. And, you know, you've got all these admin buildings upstairs, or, you know, but as you can hear in the background here, they still use this as a performance space.
It really clogs up Main Street, too, when they do that.
Well, that it does. But on the other hand, again, this sense of occasion when you start early in the day. So,
ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you for joining us on Main Street. But
they're doing any changes to shopping?
They are reviewing the opportunities. I mean, obviously, we have watched. Even for the 1971 version of Disneyland, you know, there wasn't the adherence that you saw with, you know, the 55 Disneyland. You didn't have, you know, the actual drugstore with the leeches, you know.
Those were the days.
Damn. So, but here, you know, again, you don't have the tobacco shop. You don't have the photography place. You are looking at what else could we be doing here. And, you know, honestly, part of the problem is that this audience, the people who are here today, you know, they don't connect with turn of the century. I mean, this is charming, but it's not
It's all lost on them.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the reasons why the Imagineers have pushed for the last couple of parks when they've done Magic Kingdoms. I mean, for example, the original plan, there were two plans for Hong Kong Disneyland. And one of them was, okay, we keep Main Street and forget about keeping the stores authentic. It's like, you know, you walk by, you know, a turn of the century facade, but it's a Chili's. You know, and it's a lovely ornate grillwork, and it's the Gap. But the other idea, and honestly, I wish they had pursued it, was 1950s America. So it's Big Fin cars, and it's, you know, you go down to the TV shop where it's like, oh my God, they've got a 15-inch screen. Ah,
a color TV.
No, you got to see this, you know, and it's just, but the whole notion of, you know, Letterman sweaters, you know, you know, that's Richie Potsy, you know, that sort of vibe. And in the end, you know, because I honestly, when Hong Kong was being put forward, Eisner had fallen out of being, you know, love with being an architecture patron.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, well, think about it. When you drive around, you know, Disney property. Oh, sorry. You see so many spectacular buildings. You know, that Eisner himself put out there. But, you know, the downside is that somebody actually had to maintain those buildings.
Yeah, capital for improving them or maintaining them is a pain. Is anything happening with, Casey's we just tried, right? Casey's has new hot dogs. Those are fabulous. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else happening on this end of Main Street towards the castle?
They are, obviously we're now dealing with the new memory show and using Castle is performance space. That campaign is kind of a dud.
Really?
It's certainly not doing what they expected. I mean, for example, just tonight, the Monday night, there's a single show, 9:45.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's, you know, these days people are like, oh, there's something? You know, they turn around while they're moving in the park.
Yeah.
You know, the whole notion of go stand in front of the castle and see pictures of yourself hasn't landed. People don't realize that.
I mean, the concept and the technology are great.
Absolutely.
It goes on a little long, but this, somebody said it best. I was with somebody in Disneyland. Mm-hmm. We were watching it get projected on
Small World.
Mm-hmm. And they said the exact same thing. It's colorful, it's pretty, it's a great idea, but in the end, who wants to look at someone else's vacation photos?
There you go. And that's the thing. They are now looking to what can we do storytelling-wise.
Storytelling. Now that would be interesting. So like a movie or something.
Well, it more to the effect of, you know, for example, Mickey's Not So Scary. You know, the notion of, okay, if Maleficent takes over the castle, it's like you can watch her wave her magic wand and literally watch the vines cover the building. You could have Mad Madam Mim on one turret and Merlin on the other turret, you know, having a wizard's duel. And, you know, they're at this point, entertainment is storyboarding their ass off, trying to find some way
to do this.
Yeah, because again, all of this infrastructure is in place, but as of right now, it's just not landed.
I saw it once. I'll see it here once just to see it, but it didn't have the staying power that I thought it would.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Oh. And again, for repeatability, it's not something, you know, it's not something, oh, the fireworks, which I just saw the other night. Oh, the fireworks, I have to see them again.
Yeah.
This is like, the castle thing, gotta go.
Got it, yeah, saw it.
So.
All right, so we're walking our way to Tomorrowland. We just went through the Tomorrowland Terrace, the former Noodle Station. Mm-hmm. It's still the Noodle Station, but any plans for that? The problem with it is, I mean, it's a great idea, great concept, right? Yep. Asian food in the park. Mm-hmm. There was some variety, it was different, right? It's not something that they normally do. I love the idea. The execution was less something to be desired.
Yep, and more to the point, I mean, again, you get this constant pushback about, you know, face it, the terrace area has this primo view of the castle.
It does.
And they would really love to be able to capitalize on it in, you know, an ongoing basis. So you do have things like the fireworks dessert parties. You do have the, you know, the seasonal pieces of entertainment they do here, along with the old viewing areas for the swan boats.
Right.
But again, this is the problem. It's just sort of like you have to have areas where, when you have that seasonal bump of an attendance, we have 30 or 40,000 more people in the park, and more to the point, they're willing to pay a premium price for the holidays to do something like this.
Because they set up buffets here during.
They do, and it's just the whole notion of it means you have to leave it empty, you know, or basically underused for 300 days out of the year for the 65 days where you make money hand over fist.
Huh.
And so, you know, again, we're standing here at, 10:30 in the morning, and this is, you know, this is empty. I mean, it's a commanding view.
It's a beautiful view of the castle, I mean, just looking at it.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's just sort of like, why spend money to change this and fix this when, you know, for 2 months out of the year, you make so much money out of this location. Just sort of like, no, leave it alone. We could spend money wiser on things we actually need to fix. So, you know, not to say they haven't, you know, they don't look at the menu, changing out the restaurant up there. I mean, it wasn't all that long ago they served burgers out of this place.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not on the list, so.
Okay. I think Tomorrowland needs a sit-down.
Okay.
All right, so we're coming up on the main walkway between the hub and Tomorrowland. We've got Stitch up on our left. We've got Monsters Laugh Floor Comedy Club on our right. So far today, not much of a wait for either of those.
Very true. But, you know, again, Tomorrowland has always, always been problematic.
I think you said this best. The main problem with this particular area right here, this walkway, mm-hmm. but between the central hub and the Astro Orbiters, mm-hmm. is facades.
Yep.
It's the two entrances are like 90-degree angles to the walkway. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's a slanted walkway. There's nothing that beckons you in.
You need
like carnival barkers like New Orleans.
Well, it's not for lack of trying. I mean, it's just, you know, you've got Vegas-style marquees out here, and, you know, they're making the effort. And, in fact, what's kind of intriguing is that, if they had gone forward with that Incredibles attraction, I mean, this would really have changed things out.
Incredibles attraction?
Yeah, well, there was... it's kind of the one of the sadder stories of recent Disney history. It's the Kooka arm, which is, you know, sort of the key to the Harry Potter thing. But I just had somebody explain to me the whole layout of what they were looking to do, and it was amazing. They were going to literally sacrifice Laugh Floor. that was going to be your cue. And, you know, you literally go back and forth, and you are in the Incredibles training facility. And they were going to, where the old Galaxy Place Theater, which is now backstage parking, is, you know, a KUKA arm ride through. And, you know, the beauty of it is they were going to be able to dial up if you wanted Mr. Incredible level, you know, extreme attraction versus Jack-Jack. You could dial it down to a kid-friendly ride. I mean, it was literally interactive. But the beauty of it was that they were going to make one central, I mean, in fact, we're coming up on where it would have been built. They would have built one central giant Pixar Toy Story location, which they would have dumped the Buzz Lightyear riders off with the Incredible riders into, you know, one giant retail opportunity.
Wow.
So.
Never happened.
Well, it's, you know, part of the problem is, frankly, that Universal has an exclusive on
the KUKA arm
for 5 years. And then at that point, it moves on. Once that's done, Disney will get a little more aggressive with the technology. But at the same time, this really is, you know, Disney being eclipsed by Potter. Hmm. So,
anything going on with Carousel of Progress as we walk by it? I got stuck on this on New Year's Eve 6 times in a row in the last scene.
Thankfully,
the last three, they turned off the audio, so it was just the characters going through the motion.
Oh.
But then it was odd because you saw people trying to talk, but all they were doing was clicking with the hydraulics.
Oh.
It was a little spooky.
Totally spooky. There has been a plan in place for a while now to move Carousel over to Epcot as part of Interventions. But again, Disney has been hesitant to pull the trigger on this, because again, it's one of these things where it's like, you know, there's enough information out there about, you know, it's kind of the famous thing that John Hench said about Carousel of Progress, about there's more Walt in that attraction than anything else on property.
Yeah.
And so it's like, but at the same time, let's be honest here, that's not the Walt version. This is the version with Gene Shepard that got re-recorded in the 90s.
Yep.
And don't get me wrong, he's a fan of Christmas Story. I love the fact that there's, you know, the Red Ryder rifle with a BB, you know, and a compass in the stock. It's in there. It's literally on the kid's bed in the 40s. But it's just not a priority, at least not now. So, you know, I do know that they've had meetings about, can we at least get a new television in there? Can we at least update the video game? Because, come on. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's classic. It's like classic early 90s technology.
Absolutely, absolutely. So,
what's going on with... So, we just actually passed a couple of things here. We passed the Tomorrowland stage that was the aborted home of Stitch's Supersonic Celebration. The most maligned, but yet best, if by best we mean worst, stage show ever in the history of the Magic Kingdom.
Okay.
What are they doing with that?
Two words, John Carter.
John Carter. Oh, yeah, the...
John Carter of Mars. You are going to see some pretty impressive work done here to promote that film.
When's it come out?
That comes out next March or thereabouts. They've actually... They rotated it down to sort of the Alice in Wonderland slot that the Tim Burton movie had a year or so back, with the hope that it will catch and be able to move lots of DVDs and that sort of thing. I mean, there's... That's been kind of an interesting project, because Disney's made a deliberate effort to, you know, this was supposed to be Pixar's first live action. They began looking at the dailies, and it's like, you know, Disney can release this. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how that one lands. But that supposedly holds the key to, there'll be character encounters. In fact, I think we've talked about how they were going to take giant-sized maquettes from the six-armed horses and warriors and that sort of thing. Actually place them along the People Mover track to try to, you know, to add some new kinetics. But yeah, it's so much of this depends on how that movie does, and then in turn, you know, how much they're willing to spend to bring it in here.
Are they going to release the theme park stuff along with the movie, or they're going to wait and say the movie does?
You have to shake the magic eight ball on that. I mean, it's kind of like what just happened with the Enchanted Tiki Room. I mean, I'm sure... You know, you heard the news that broke over this weekend that And the weird thing is, I called over to Imagineering 10 days ago.
Yeah.
They swore up and down, you know, no, we're not doing anything with Tiki. We're going to bring it back to what it was. But it keeps...
It was going to be under new management again after the fire.
And now it's kind of... They very cagey language. They're going to the effect of, we're going to be bringing back, you know, an enchanted Tiki-like attraction that pays tribute to the original. I mean, you know, part of the problem, again, is that, you know, Wally Bogue is, you know, just... He's been in poor health for years. So many of the other people who recorded for it are gone.
Yeah.
So we can't really fix it. But again, the notion that here was, we're not going to do it, we are going to do it, we're not going to do it, we are going to do it. The 40th anniversary is coming up. We have nothing that really is tied to the original. Okay, fine, we'll do that. You know,
is that what that's going to be?
Yeah, I mean, that's their big, hey, we're bringing it back for the 40th. It'll be back up in October, you know, as our gift to the guests. You know,
but I don't see it staying, though. I mean, as much as I love the original, it's there in Disneyland. But it'd be one of those things where I'd see it once in Walt Disney World just to see it again in Walt Disney World, and that would be it.
Well, but see, that's the thing. In fact, that's the frustration from a lot of the Imagineers, is nostalgia won out again. That rather than do... In fact, the thing we talked about the other day, that rather than doing the Pirates of the Caribbean, come in here and this is where you get your parrot, you know, something fresh.
I kind of like that idea better, actually.
Absolutely. But at the same time, it's just sort of like... It's easier, particularly in an anniversary year, to sell nostalgia. So, okay, fine. We'll spend the money. But at the same time, they're going to be very careful about what they take out. They're not going to take out Aoa. You know, I mean, it's an amazing AA figure. But it means then, if you don't do that, you can't do the old classic Tiki show with the fountains and all that. No, it's just... I think that's the other thing that people just don't understand about Imagineering, about literally how fluid things are. It's like... When a sponsor will fall out, or a sponsor will make a weird demand.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, when they brought Carousel of Progress here to Walt Disney World, about that time, GE changed its slogan. So the Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow, it's like they literally turned to the Shermans like, look, we... we have this new slogan. Like, now is the time to buy a new product, damn it. You know? So could you build a song around that? But it's like, but it's a beloved song. It's like, we don't care. And so it's like, okay, fine. We'll redo the show. We'll do the song. All on the back of a demand of a sponsor.
Yeah. I think people who work in big companies understand how things change, right? If you've ever had to do a multi-year budget at a big company, you totally understand how these things work. I think a lot of people who haven't yet had that experience... it's kind of a black box to them. It's kind of a mystery how it all could happen, right?
But at the same time, Disney has to own a piece of this, because they of any company, any entertainment company, you know, they built up this cult of Walt, and you know Walt's tenets, how Walt did the parks, and you know, so you can't put that mythology out there, and it's all right,
and then ignore it.
No, that's it exactly. Yeah. This is how we do things, except we don't. You know, now give us your money. You know, so it's a frustration. But on the other hand, you know, the fact that they sell books, they sell videos, they sell DVDs with, you know, Walt out there saying this stuff, you know, they can't help. But, and it's like, why are you not doing that? Because it costs money, and we don't like spending our own money. And,
exactly.
You know, and there you go. So,
is there anything going on with Space Mountain? You know, just did the refurb.
As of right now, you know, it just... if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Okay.
And you know that they freshened it up. It's kind of, you know, we're standing outside, for example, of Tomorrowland Speedway right now.
Yep.
There has been a Cars themed overlay on the table, off the table, on the table, for 3 years now. And
this is one of the more obvious overlays. I don't understand why they're not doing that.
To be honest, it's kind of a turf war that Walt... you know, the Disney Hollywood Studios, long term, and we're talking now 2016, 2017, will get Cars Land, the new land that's being built for California Adventure.
Right.
But, you know, so the notion is that's where you'll go see the Cars characters. You'll be able to ride inside of them. And so they're the ones who actually, you know, operationally sort of threw themselves in front of the Cars characters being brought over to Tomorrowland.
But that's 2016. It's 2011. They could still run it for 5 years.
See, you're thinking rationally again, Len. All right, you have to remember how these people operate. That, you know, again, the guys who, the VPs of the individual parks, they are ridiculously competitive when it comes to money to build new attractions in the park, money to promote their attractions, money for entertainment, you know, and on it goes. So.
So we're overlooking, we're looking over at the new layout for the back end of the Tomorrowland Speedway, sort of the offloading part. They redid the track because of the Tomorrowland, the Toontown closure and the Fantasy Land expansion. But we're looking over now, we can sort of see what's left of the Barnstormer, which is going to be the Great Goofini.
Yes, it is.
And then we see the sort of the circus tent from Storybook Circus, which, I don't know, it could just be my poor architectural eye. It looks a lot like the Toontown Hall of Fame tent, but I could be wrong. I'm sure there's some sort of subtle difference there.
No subtle difference whatsoever. And again,
hey, we got a tent. What can we do with it? Let's go back to the archives.
Well,
what films involve tents? Tents.
Well, you know, and when you get right down to it, honestly, the reason this building is still standing is that is where County Bounty was housed.
Bounty. Bounty, a store?
The store.
Yeah.
And County Bounty was second only to the Emporium on property for sales of merchandise.
Wow.
And literally, the retail folks... Just, it was one of these things, all right, we're going to flatten that, we're going to put this in. It's like, are you high? Are you crazy? It's like, so they threw themselves in front of that. And actually, in a lot of ways, that forced the whole Storybook Circus development. Because it's like...
Yeah, because that sort of end of it was one of the last to be sort of flushed out in terms of the
absolutely,
concept,
absolutely.
Right?
And still, there's...
Even now, it's like, well, you look at the art, and you're like, well, what goes here? Nobody knows.
No, they are, in fact, again, they are deliberately being vague, because frankly, a lot of this is still very much up in the air. In fact, in a lot of ways, it's an empty victory to keep... County, you know, the equivalent of County Bounty here. I mean, this is where, what is it? They're going to put in it's Big Top Souvenirs. And the gimmick is you're going to be standing there under the three little pigs who are going to be doing a high wire act over your head.
Nice.
And it's actually some limited movement AA figures. It's going to be kind of cool. But the reality is that building store did as well as it did because parents were trapped there waiting for their children to go through the princess and the character photo op. And now there is no character photo op tied to that. It's not going to do the same numbers.
Unless they bring one back now that they've heard this.
Trust me, they are looking. They're going to be doing play testing for a Dumbo-based character greeting. But honestly, you know, it's like, stand next to the giant elephant, honey. You know.
Exactly. Then what? So on this side, what's this sort of construction stuff that's going immediately to the left of... Are those vultures circling, by the way?
Well, that's right.
That's yes. a little creepy.
Another construction worker has been tragically killed.
So what's the stuff that's looks like the steel frame that's going up immediately to the left of the Storybook Circus line?
We're actually looking at a little bit of back of the house stuff for...
Mermaid?
For Mermaid. I mean, there will be rock work to cover up some of that. But honestly, again, you're going to enter through a... Well... Yes, there we go. The Big Top Souvenirs.
Big Top Souvenirs.
Yep.
Okay.
But you're actually going to enter through a portal. We're actually sort of loitering in the exit area for here. But there'll be a portal roughly in this area for the Storybook Circus thing.
Over by Mad Tea Party.
And, you know, but that'll blend out, you know, be a logical transition from the Little Mermaid area. Mermaid is, you know... gonna be pretty cool, but at the same time, they're they want it to be a people eater, and they're still adjusting the ride time.
Yeah. We looked at the ride time. It's somewhere between 5.5 and 8 minutes is what they're playing with.
Yeah.
They're gonna hit 6.5.
Yeah.
And that'll be around, 1,700, 2,000 people an hour?
It's still gonna be amazing, and you're gonna have your character meet and greet component in some of the caves coming off of this thing. Coupled with retail. I mean, again, it's a one-stop shop for the Mermaid fans.
That's good.
By the way, we're in the Great Expanse.
Yeah, this is sort of the DMZ, the No Man's Land between. So we're over by Winnie the Pooh right now, and there's a bunch of stuff over. Well, essentially, it's a construction wall that goes from Mad Tea Party through the end of Fantasyland.
This weekend, got the story as to why this is a sea of concrete. And it's like, you are literally right here now, standing over the tunnels.
Oh, really? We're over the tunnels.
All right, and but that's
did
the
you,
whole...
Did you bring the pickaxe?
But
oh, that explains why the concrete is cracking the way it is.
Yes, okay.
It looks like Los Angeles post-1988 earthquake.
But the other issue here is that this is why this has been heads... had little to no green space forever, because they couldn't, you know, you had the lagoon here for 20,000 leagues.
Yep.
So, in fact, that's one of the components. We're looking at some of the placeholder trees now that will eventually be dropped into spots all over the Fantasyland Forest thing, but they're hoping to up the green and more to the point, create more shade and, you know, get people to linger over here, because ultimately, again, this is what this is all about. They want you to stay deep back in the park, spend money on food, merch.
Yep.
You know. But
I mean, this is nothing but a sea of concrete. We're actually in the middle of the concrete right now, and you can kind of feel the heat.
Yep. No, absolutely. But as I was saying earlier, we're looking ahead at Dumbo, and again, that's going very fairly shortly. And they literally just picture a wall cleaved down the middle of that, and from going from this point forward is the Fantasyland Forest. So trees come up here, and plants, and walkways.
Huh. So we can kind of see through some of the trees, the stuff that's going on with Fantasyland. Bell's Castle looks like they're doing. Is that Bell? Is that the castle? Or
yeah, that's it exactly. And you're seeing your faux mountain range being put into place now.
It's not going to be a real mountain range. It's going to be faux.
That's right. Made out of genuine faux, Len.
Okay.
So, now where we're the space we're staring into now is where Seven Dwarfs Mine Train will go. Okay.
Right.
Got some specifics finally for you. Okay.
Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. Right?
Okay. Literally is the attraction that sits between Big Thunder and
the
Great Goofini.
Okay.
All right. In
so
that
it's an younger kids, like a grade school style attraction.
But instead of, you know, for Goofini, which has one hill and one runout, and Big Thunder, which has three, this is literally two hills, two runouts.
It's the average. And the Porsche Cayman of it's the middle entry.
Also, they did confirm that after a few of the themed elements, you're rolling through the forest. As soon as you roll into the mine itself, it becomes a dark ride.
Really?
Yep. And they confirmed cameo by Snow White, and you know, just alluded to the fact that, you know, and you may see the witch. I mean, I don't know, possibly.
Depends on what it tests out to be.
Yeah, but that's definitely a go. The scarier piece of information, and again, I can't wrap my head around this, but they were talking about, you have to understand that the Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty, you know, play and greets fell off the table, but Belle is still going forward.
Yeah, well, they're doing the storybook thing with Belle too, right?
Yeah,
bringing that back.
But here's where it gets crazy. The Imagineer who's in charge of this expansion said that, you know, he believes it's going to be the Belle character encounters going to be the real sleeper of this expansion area, because you're going to get a 40-minute long, you know, encounter in that world.
40 minutes?
40 minutes.
And the throughput's going to be six people a day.
You know, that's the thing. And this is the guy who was actually talking about that you can't build the most beautiful restaurant in the world and only serve 10 people an hour. But then he turns around and says, and we're going to give you a 40-minute opportunity. You're going to get to talk with the, you know, Madame LaBouche, the giant wardrobe, and, you know, move.
40 minutes.
40 minutes.
Character encounter.
And it was one of these things where I caught him afterwards and was like, 40, not 14.
Three groups every 2 hours.
I don't understand how it's possible.
18 groups. So unless it's like 1,000 people a pop, I don't see it, because three groups every 2 hours.
I don't understand
it's
it.
18 groups and 18 groups of people in a 12-hour day.
They are insistent. They've done the play testing down here. You know, in fact, we're looking now. This is how you'll enter. You'll enter through. That's Maurice's cottage.
Okay.
All right. You.
So
end
we're looking.
Up...
We're looking directly behind Dumbo here. We can
okay.
see some Tyvek.
And you can actually see the show building behind that. It is fairly sizable.
Yeah.
But
so the building is pretty big. And actually, the detail. They've already got some detailed detail of the castle up. If you go in the other side of Dumbo.
Oh yeah. No. It, don't get me wrong. There's some wonderful work being done here. But you know, the way it works, you go to Maurice's workshop, and then something unfortunate happens, which basically beams you to the Beast Castle.
Oh.
All right, and then it's an interesting, you know, again, you have Madame LaBouche, who entertains you for a few moments before you're then directed to the room that you're meeting Belle in. And the gimmick with Belle is that Belle loves to tell stories, but we're all going to take a role in that story. So you're literally everybody from dad to the littlest kid is going to have a part to play in the story that Belle is going to tell you.
Wow.
So, I don't know. All I can say, folks, go early. I think it's going to change.
So the, yeah, if you want to see it, go early. So it's kind of like the Rapunzel meet and greet now, right, where they...
Well, that is, you know, that one of the early prototypes of this thing. That,
and, well, but, well, the thing is, the Rapunzel meet and greet is now, it's starting at 9:30 in the morning, it's a 2-hour wait. I think that's the bulking time, though. It's not like more people don't want to do it. No one wants to wait more than 2 hours to meet Rapunzel.
I don't know what to tell you, but I know that they're thrilled with that, because it's like, you know, when you're standing there, I'm hot. Oh, well, I get your soda.
It's right next to Cosmic Rays.
Yeah, what an amazing coincidence.
Huh, how about that? So we're walking up on Snow White's Scary Adventure. This may be the last time that we see it.
Yeah.
Or the Will, Snow White.
You know, I actually feel bad for that kid, the...
Ben. Yeah, Ben.
I don't, you know, it's one of these things where they made such a big deal about his 2000th ride and, you know, got him the poster. And I get it. It's one of these things where I know things must move on, but I feel really badly for Ben.
That's right. Ben's going to be up near 3,000 rides, more than that. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's a great story. But I rode with him once.
Did you really?
I really did. He's fantastic. I rode with his parents, too.
Oh, very cool.
So, so for our listeners, Ben's an autistic child who... really likes Snow White, and his parents had taken him on over and over again because it's the thing he wants to see when he's in the park. And by the time I'd met him back in like 2007, mm-hmm. it was he was on his like 2000th ride, and now he's got to be up around 4,000. But yeah. I rode with his parents. It was the funniest thing.
Mm-hmm.
so I'm asking his parents, you've been on this ride 2,000 times. Yeah. How do you do it? Because I rode Big Thunder 11 times in a row once, and I was like, okay, I'm done. didn't go on again for 5 years.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, every time we go through it, we try and imagine this is a different attraction. So, you know, they try and put, like, the Tiki Room in there, which is hysterical.
Oh,
I loved it.
That is funny.
What about the retail spaces behind the castle here? We've got Sir Mickey's on our left. We're looking at the back of the castle.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Sir Mickey's on our left. We've got the Castle Couture on our right.
There's a great story about that, actually, just recently. This got loaded in, and there was... great internal debates. It's like, are people actually going to know what couture means? And it's
they
like,
are
what?
Americans, after all.
Well, that's like, you know, the Bravo. You understand that? You know. but the other thing, the initial name of this this retail space was Enchanted Couture. And then they got pushed back from the studio. No, wait. Yeah, we're putting on a movie called Enchanted. We don't want there to be any... So you got to find a new name. But, you know, the level of detail here, I mean, again, these days, you know, the Imagineers put filigrees on filigrees on filigrees. I mean, you'll notice the bobbin, the ribbon.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's the storytelling is consistent. You know, again, this is where they make the dresses, and this is how we do it.
Oh, we're looking at the some of the spires on Castle Couture, and they're actually little bobby pins and the pin cushions.
Yep. And thread.
That's really well done. I've never noticed that before. And I've been here once or twice. Let's go back this way.
Okay. But
we're walking back north towards Prince Regal's carousel.
Now.
Cynically. Yeah. So let's count the number of boys on the attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's. No, he's getting off. Never mind. No, there's one. There's one.
Kicking and screaming.
Exactly.
So, all right, we are going to see on the backside of the Fantasyland Forest expansion, a freshening up of elements here. You may see a store or two changed out. You may see some restroom menu changes, but overall, I mean, this portion that we're walking by Filler Magic now, looking at Pinocchio House, this will basically change very little.
Is Pinocchio Village House staying?
A lot of that kind of keys off of what's going on. You see, the original plan was they were going to share one giant kitchen with the Be Our Guest restaurant, which, of course, makes sense for the first part of the day when it's quick service.
Right.
I think, if I understand correctly, they eventually took a look at it and realized that wasn't going to fly. Particularly given where they need an honest-to-God kitchen to cook food for, the nighttime service. So, the people at Pinocchio House really were counting on that money, and now it's not going to happen. Mm. So,
We're walking up now past, so we've got Pinocchio Village House on our right. We've got Peter Pan coming up on our left, and It's a Small World on our left. By the way, did you notice the, I know it'll move eventually, but we've got Peter Pan Fast Passes over by PhilharMagic, which is just crazy, because I tried following the signs and I couldn't find it.
No, but again, so much of what's going on right now in this part of the park is checkers. You're just temporarily moving things to hold them while other pieces are put into place, and then you rotate. And at the same time, frankly, you've got the issue of, you know, are we moving FastPass out of the park and making it something that guests who stay only at our premium resorts get?
Woo.
And
that's that'd be controversial. Ooh, there's a line for a Small World. That's strange.
Well,
I love the that they've redone the entrance and exit, though. That totally makes sense now.
This is great urban planning, you know. But at the same time, this is going to get interesting as we're coming up now to the Fantasyland Old Skyway.
Skyway.
And this is where, you know, the most beautiful bathrooms in Puppet Land are going to be built. You know. The whole point of this complex, I mean, it's sort of a wheels within wheels deal. All right, stop a sec. We flatten this. Okay.
So we're looking at the trees that are behind and to the left of the old Skyway station, sort of coming on the backside of Peter Pan.
And if you were to remove the hillside, the buildings here, you'd realize that Small World and Haunted Mansion, literally, there's that much space between the two of them. Two giant show buildings.
Really?
So you drop the restrooms in here, but at the same time, one of the key components of this is, you know, miles and miles and miles of stroller parking is obviously what we're looking at here.
It's a lot of real estate, I think, to dedicate to stroller parking.
Well, but at the same time,
they need a stroller parking garage.
Well, I mean, but again, we were just down at Town Square at the new Main Street Theater. In fact, what I found fascinating was that when you walk out of the retail space for that, what used to be a wonderful ornamental garden is literally the
stroller parking.
Stroller parking.
Get rid of it, yeah.
No, I mean it's a necessary.
Somewhere there's an Indian on the landfill with crying with one tear coming out of his eye.
But it's honestly a necessary evil. You have to. I mean, parents come here; they have strollers. You know, they pay for them; they want access to them. So we have our bathroom along with more stroller parking than you could ever imagine. But that coupled with the fact that. If you look down the hill where Yankee Trader is, this is where we're going to have our new Princess Retail opportunity, which is going to share space with our Haunted Mansion Retail opportunity.
Got it.
You know,
Just looking at the stroller space, one thing that strikes me, look how few Disney strollers there are here.
Yeah.
Look, there's one there,
yep.
Three there, four there, mm-hmm. One there, but then that's it. It's a sea of bring your own stroller. That's what $20 a day does best for you.
Well, no, but you see, that's the thing, that they have effectively priced themselves out.
And they have.
You know, but again, we were talking about this the other day, that is another issue that's kind of biting Disney in the butt, the whole notion of when you've raised ticket prices to this point, you know, again, people, if they're not getting 10 rides a day per park, they don't feel like they're getting their money's worth.
Yeah.
And, you know, during a time when down the street has a certain boy wizard, you know, that can be an issue.
It could be. So we're over here at Peter Pan. This is the end of our Fantasyland tour. Actually, Fantasyland it goes into Columbia Harbor House.
Yep.
Actually, the segue is really nice. Peter Pan, they're going to do an interactive queue?
Yes. In fact, right here, we're watching the point where the queue actually wraps around the bathrooms. They're going to literally, the bathroom's gutted, and there's been this interesting push back and forth as to, well, where exactly are they, you know, where are they playing? You know, because it's like, in the ride,
in the queue, where are you supposed to be? Right?
Yes, all right. You don't get to go to Fantasyland, so you fly out the window and fly over London. So you can't have them playing there. But it's, well, again, actually, I have to tell this story to tell that story. They were having the creative meetings for Star Tours.
Yep.
And you have to understand the storyline of the new Star Tours ride is set in between, you know, the first set of prequels, the prequels and the original films.
Right. And that's just so that they can make stuff up.
Well, but here's the thing, okay? So, you know, the Imagineers, who are big, big, big time Star Wars fans.
Yep.
You know, and it's just sort of like, well, we're going to go to Hoth. And it's like, well, wait a minute, we can't go to Hoth because there's no Rebel, there's no Alliance. You know, it's this time between the wars. And so, it's like, so we can't do the Snowspeeders, we can't do the Addas, we can't do the Walkers. And so they're doing So it's all right. Okay, so we'll work up a whole different scenario for that. So they're doing the meeting with Lucas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he finally, it's like, oh, that's all great, but why didn't you do the walkers? Why didn't you do the Addis? And they look at the one Imagineer who kind of dug in his heels and is like, come on, you know, it's got to be all time period authentic. And he lays out his argument. It's like, and George Lucas says, eh, who's going to care?
George Lucas.
You know, just like,
eh. And the guy who keeps the cannon next to George Lucas is smacking himself in the head.
Yeah, that's exactly. So that's the same argument the Imagineers are having. It's like, well, we haven't flown to Neverland. It's like, who's going to care?
The continuity isn't that bad.
Yeah, so let's just put in what they want. And what they'd love to do is, like, have an area where they can play in Mermaid Lagoon or have a, you know, so, you know, that, they're nailing down that design. But again, you just flat this area and just picture being able to look in and see happy people playing there. You know, that's the other component.
Ah, got it.
And, but at the same time, just think about what that's going to do for the line for Peter Pan, how many people you're going to get off the street.
Yeah.
And that ultimately is the other thing about these new expanded interactive queues, that ultimately it's more people off the street. So.
Cool. That's great. I'm going to miss this Alpine Little Village here because it was never used for anything, although it did go on the Skyway once, mm-hmm. so I'm happy to say it.
Yeah.
But the theming here is really good.
It is. It's charming. But at the same time, they look for something that will literally carry over the architectural look of the building surrounding.
It makes sense.
So
I love the Segway here, too, from Fantasyland, too.
It is. And, well, say goodbye.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, you know, I mean...
It is. It's beautiful. It's charming.
But at the same time, I mean, the fact that we're walking under... Harbor House, you know, extended dining.
Yep.
But this has always meant that if you're driving a panel truck and delivering things around here in Disney, you have to go the long way around the barn through Liberty Square. So, you know, I
still,
mean...
Still, charming.
It is. But again,
sacrifices must be made. All right, we're coming back to a Haunted Mansion. Why don't we end up at the Hall of Presidents?
Okay. So...
So the good thing about Hall of Presidents is it gets a little bit of a refurb every 4 years. Or maybe every 8.
It does, but I still... That said, you know, if they had built Disney's America, this would all be gone.
What would they have turned it into?
Well, it's kind of, it's an interesting story. What they
More stroller parking.
There
good.
You go.
Good. We need is a colonial, but again, look how few Disney rent-owned strollers are here.
Again, it's the price point has causes.
Huh.
Anyway, for Disney's America, there was actually going to be an area called President Square, which... You know, I don't know how they're going to make this work, but instead of having a room full of presidents, it was going to be a hallway. And each president was going to have an alcove. And, you know, you could literally go up and hammer the buttons, and Warren G. Harding would lurch.
I was a financial, you know, scandal. And
Teapot Dome.
There you go. I don't want to talk about it. I just want to sit here and drink quietly. but they... So this is, you got a 95, 96. This is... About the time that Disney and Jerry Bruckheimer are just getting together.
Yeah.
And literally the attraction that was the Imagineers were pitching to Bruckheimer at this point was using the moving floor technology from Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Right.
It was literally an early iteration of Soaring, but narrated by Bruce Willis. You know, sort of the, America, our country, I love it, look at it. But you were going to fly over the battle of Concord and Lexington. You were going to... You know, it's you know, the fly over the Dust Bowl, you know, just...
It's not a bad idea.
No, it isn't. But just at the same time, it's just sort of like, oh, really? That's what you were going to do?
The Dust Bowl, yes.
Oh, before I forget, we should probably talk about this in Fantasyland, but we're coming up on Sleepy Hollow Tavern and that sort of thing. But I actually got all sorts of confirmation this weekend about... The original Fantasyland rides.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The whole notion was when they were going to come here, they didn't want to necessarily repeat themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So you got... but it's the same thing. You wanted the beautiful ride. You wanted the, you know, you wanted the scary ride. And you wanted the wild ride. So in place of the scary ride, they were going to have a... it was Sleeping Beauty. And, you know, your vehicle went through the thorn forest... And then you were menaced by the goons, and then you came up this ride hill, and here was an animatronic Maleficent as a dragon that, you know, was supposed to blow flame at you, and then you rolled out and offload. Let's see, for The Beautiful Ride replaced Peter Pan. There were two different ride vehicles. There was one where literally in the flying thing, you were out sitting under an umbrella that would then fly you through this environment.
Nice.
But the really cool version was a carousel. And so just like in Jolly Holiday, you would do one lap on the carousel and then it would jump off into the environment and then you'd go through... You know,
on the carousel horse.
On the carousel.
Nice. Now that'd be interesting.
That would be interesting. Now, for the Wild Ride, there were two versions. There was one literally that was called the Wizard's Duel, and it was Sword in the Stone. But the whole notion is you're driving in between Madman and Mim and Merlin, who are slinging magic bolts at one another. But that was literally when they'd hit the wand, that's when the blackout doors would open and you move to the next room, the next environment.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was a clever idea. But the really cool idea, and again, I bring it up because we're here just at the edge of Sleepy Hollow, was they were going to do the Ichabod Crane. They were going to do the Headless Horseman ride. And
really?
But
it would segue well, yeah, because you're coming in from a Hudson River Valley architecture at Haunted Mansion.
That's it, exactly. But what was cool is that it was the earliest version of Roger Rabbit Cartoon Spin. You were going to get in a pumpkin that was, you know, with a little turn mechanism, and
nice.
Now you're rolling through this ride building that you can spin as, you know, the Headless Horseman is rearing up at various points. And it would have been cool. And again, but it was Fantasyland storytelling.
Oh, that would be great.
Would have been a wonderful transition right to here, to Liberty Square.
That would totally make sense.
So, well, like I said, they are literally, it's like, don't spend money in there anymore. Yep. Or to the effect of, let's find other things in the park that it makes sense. I mean, attractions that we actually plus. So that's where they're headed. You know, it's, but at the same time, you've got this $500 million Q project going on.
And, Q?
Yeah, I mean,
Q.
Literally, they're
like
spending...
Lines.
They're spending money on redoing the queues of 10 of the major attractions in the park, trying to make them that much more interactive so when you stand in line, you're not bitching and moaning. And it's not being spent on the attraction.
It's just on the lines.
It's just on the lines.
Because that's the most memorable part of the ride for me. Remember that time we almost passed out from heat stroke? That was the best ride.
But I mean, you just have to walk through this park and see other initiatives that are like that that have failed. I mean, on the way over to Casey's,
yeah,
I walked by the 10 Fast Pass machines for Stitch's Great Escape. You know, how'd that work out for you?
Yeah, that was great.
You know?
I think they're moving those, right? I've heard that they're so apparently the number of Fast Pass machines in the world is like the speed of light. It's fixed. That they don't build new Fastpass machines, they just move them around these days.
Well, at the same time, you know, Disney has just been reluctant to go full Skybox route. I mean, the whole notion of, you know, there are people who are willing to pay for Fastpasses. We should let them pay. And...
they will.
But, you know, just it's the notion of that's nakedly greedy. We can't do it this year. Let's creep up on it slowly.
What's the... do they have, like, a transition plan to get to that point? Like, they could tie it to deluxe resorts, right?
Well, that's the initial idea, but there's actually a fully tiered system. In fact, the whole notion of they want you to book out your trip. They want you to say, okay, you know, in 3 months when I go to Disney, I'm doing the Magic Kingdom on Wednesday. I'm doing Hollywood Studios on Thursday. You know, I'm going to go to Epcot both Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, if you're willing to do that, they're like, okay, if you lock yourself into that park, we'll give you fast passes. We'll give you priority dining. Because that then allows them to actually, you know, hire employees to have enough cast members on hand to handle that sort of crowd. So,
wow. But yeah. Who plans the vacations that far out in advance?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because Iger, you know, in fact, this week at the earnings call, was talking about the fact that they're still frustrated by the fact that people are not booking Disney World vacations 6 months in advance. They're still doing it now 6 weeks in advance.
6 weeks in advance, yeah. I heard the same thing.
You can't staff for that. Yeah, so.
Yeah, you can't tell people. You can't hire. I mean, you can't hire and train in 6 weeks, can you?
No.
I guess you could.
Well, I mean, but it means that you can't do in-depth training. You have to be employees that are like, okay, today you're working down, but oh, wait a minute, you know, we need you over at Epcot.
Yeah.
You know, you need a level of flexibility, but you don't have the same depth of knowledge. You don't have, and for a company that does the whole, you know, put on a good show and make a magical moment. It's like, okay, well. Is it raining?
Do you think it's a 20-minute wait?
To be honest, again, it depends on the pinch point. It depends, and again, you know, that's they still haven't figured out how to describe this. Do you want to go the fast way or the fun way?
You know? Do you want to have fun or you just want to get this over with?
Yeah, sure, that's exactly. And it's just sort of like,
look, are you just checking this off the list?
Yeah.
Just go through the motions here.
You know, I just it's just bizarre. You know, and they're looking to do this again at 10 of the major attractions in this park. You know,
some of the other ones?
Well, you've got Pirates is next in line. Right behind that is Peter Pan. Peter Pan, of course, is more involved because you're talking about the whole, you know, ring around the bathroom where you, you know, rip out the bathrooms and next to Peter Pan, rip out the. In fact, they've got the walls up right now at the old Fantasyland station at the Skyway station.
Yeah, I want to go check that out.
You know, but this is the start of that. All goes away. And then you put in your massive bathroom complex with the... I mean, this is going to be the toilets of tomorrow. I mean, you know, you're going to have the family option. You're going to, you know, male, female, and other to be designated. And then off rippling off of that is Yankee Trader goes down. You get your finally get your giant Haunted Mansion-themed gift shop on this side.
Are they going to take off the... they're going to extend it out this way?
Yeah.
So we're in line for Haunted Mansion now, by the way. We're just by the entrance.
But yeah, I mean, that is the long-range plan.
Does the pet cemetery stay? Does the pet cemetery stay?
Magic 8-Ball says come back later, all right?
Okay, they don't know.
All right, the whole idea is from here, from this point here, you blow through...
Yeah, so we're looking at the end of the queue, right? So from the end of the queue coming out by the...
The ride. You'd literally go in through a crack in the crypt. I mean, the idea is you walk out of the building and it's like the crypt has been blown open. And from that side, you know, the ceiling treatment is coffins coming down and, you know,
got it.
So you're literally into the hillside. But this is also where you get your, finally get your merchandise opportunity. Oh, so now here you go. This is... Do you want the fun side or the fast side? You know,
we want fun.
Okay. But anyway, this is where you'll finally have your photo op.
Yeah.
Also will be the place where you can buy your little video loop of Ezra ripping your head off, you know. But it's just interesting that's being pushed through, that whole gift shop idea, on the back of people will buy this new technology. So.
Which side is the fun side?
Sure.
Fun side is which side? Left?
Fun side is left.
Fun side is left. We're going left.
So. But again, it's fascinating to be in here and just watch people. They don't quite know what to do. Or at least this morning when it was smaller crowds, maybe now that people have no choice, they're moving slowly, that they'll hammer on things. But yeah, Pirates is going to get the same treatment. Peter Pan's going to get the same treatment. They're trying to process the lessons from both Tomorrowland and Soaring. Well, you know, it's just crowd gaming dynamics.
Oh, right, right. So the games in the line at Soaring.
Yeah.
Those are fun, but they're exhausting. It's like a little workout.
Well, that coupled with the fact that, you know, people... What Disney hadn't counted on is that people take ownership of their game. And it's like, move along. I'm still playing.
So I got 30 more seconds.
That's exactly. It's like,
but I'm winning.
Yeah.
I'm winning.
And again, from the offside of the fence, it means a slower load.
Yeah.
So.
That's funny. So. Yeah, I've encountered that too, where you're like, you're in the middle of a game, people call you to move on.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and part of that, Disney's actually done the research. To be honest, what's biting them in the ass is the cost of admission. I mean, if you were paying $15 a day to get in here, I mean, you know, back in the, you know, late 80s, you know, or excuse me, early 80s or thereabouts before Eisner's.
$15 a day.
Vroom, you know, it's like, let's see how high this puppy can go.
Or parking, whatever you say.
Yeah. Then people had a more relaxed attitude.
All right, so we're looking at the bus. Did the bus do anything, Jim?
Well, if you lean in closely, you're supposed to be able to hear the mystery.
We're leaning in close to one of them.
Are you hearing anything yet?
No.
Okay, the way this is supposed to work is that if you wander from bus to bus,
yeah,
they each whisper clues about who actually did the other dirt. And you can eventually figure that.
Oh, yeah, I can hear. Oh, it is.
Actually, I think you're hearing the sea captain. Oh.
I'm listening. Not yet.
Well, they may have turned them off.
Okay, so one effect not working in the mansion. Okay, cool.
So, but again, this is, the whole idea was that you were supposed to wander back and forth here. But again, this is another one of these things where, right on paper, they did a fairly elaborate playtest. And in the end, I mean, look, who's standing in here now? People look at it.
We just did, but yeah. We're geeks.
Yeah. But you do a photo op, and that's it. You move on. Well, to be fair, I mean, again, it's a Disney theme park. They got to do test and adjust. You drop these things in, and
they could wrap the queue around it, but
that is Thunder Mountain.
But then it's just, yeah.
Well, but at the same time, what's fascinating about this is breaking a lot of Disney's cardinal rules about the envelope of protection. I mean, you know, the notion that I can actually touch something now, as opposed to, well, there it is, 5 feet away. Isn't it wonderful?
Behind glass. Please stay seated.
So.
I just have a fantastic idea for this ride. So we're coming up now on the crypt where you're supposed to be able to touch musical instruments and hear them play. Purell sanitizer needs to sponsor this ride.
Yeah.
So we're touching the effects. Ooh, a xylophone made of bones. It's just like GarageBand. But I like it. Oh, the Ravenscroft Model 5000. Yeah. I love the key play on that. It's really good. Huh? Oh, this is nice. Hope you guys are getting some of these effects. I like it a lot. It's good. It came out well. Oh, there's more. Oh, the captain. Now, it's a captain. He looks like a sea captain, and there's water around the crypt. What could be happening here, Jim? I'm in Mensa. Good. Tell me.
Well, you know, this has already been kind of an issue with guest relations. Because it's like, wait a minute, things are splashing on me. Tell me these aren't fluids coming off of the decaying corpse.
Fluids coming off the decaying corpse. Oh, clever. A little clever effect here with, that's nice.
It is. But because, you know, the weird thing is people look for, well, what's the pattern? And the pattern is,
there's no pattern. It's all random. So this is it's a bookshelf with books that slide in and out. What is this?
The miner forgot his warning canary. Now he mines 6 feet under the
cemetery.
Hole. Cemetery. Oh, that's great.
I wonder if it's close by.
Oh, that's great.
My understanding, that's by the way, the voice for this is April Winchell, Paul Winchell's daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's made quite a name for herself in the last. She's Disney's de facto voice for Clarabelle Cow.
That goes good on a resume. We need a Clarabelle.
She's great at indignant females. You know, large, you know, Margaret Dumont, like, ooh. So,
that's hysterical.
But anyway, again, it's just.
Oh, nice. The back of the captain's crypt is
portals. This was supposed
portals.
To be a kind of
view inside.
Well, your face would float up. You know, I mean, you'd see a tentacle, that sort of thing.
Oh, that's clever. Ran out of money.
Well, you know, I just, if you look at this, they clearly have spent the money. Here we go.
Nice. When he sneezes, water comes out.
Yes.
That's great.
So, and thankfully, we were on the not-snot side. But no, this is the template for going forward. This Pirates Interactive would be just like this. You know, you'd be helping Captain Sparrow find a treasure. Peter Pan one still keeps going back and forth. They're going to the
Neverland?
Well, actually, the Disney Fairies people. It's like, hey, could we have some dough? You know, it's like, we're going to be pushing your character.
Like, oh, that's right, Tink, right?
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, I mean, that's the fascinating thing with Disney is that, you know, you would think all this money would come all from Disney parks and resorts. And the reality is that it
all
comes from
three forward,
lots of different pots.
That's right. Yeah, they can get money from character merchandising for yeah.
And same thing. I mean, that's the whole notion of what they want to do here with the gift shop and the image capture and all that. That you can get, you know, a wonderful post show environment that somebody else pays for.
Nice. So that's a pretty elaborate queue now.
It is. It is. And at the same time, they've continued the door. You know, the story elements up the hillside, which is nice.
Oh yeah, there's more. Oh, there are more markers.
Yep.
Every graveyard needs an obelisk.
But you have, you know, the nice thing is this time around they were also able to work in tributes to some other Imagineers who hadn't quite gotten nods before. I mean, Dorothea Redmond here, and in fact, Colin Campbell, who just passed away, this obelisk right here.
Oh, really?
Acknowledges. I mean, we just lost him like 4 or 5 weeks ago.
All right, okay. So we're done writing Haunted Mansion.
Okay.
It's I like the new effects. They're nice.
No, they're but as I was mentioning that what's cool about the effects is that the technology that recognizes where your face is and grabs it was something that Disney developed, that Homeland Security learned about and licensed. In fact, that's what they use when you walk into a major stadium to determine, are you Bin Laden? Oh, wait a minute, we got him. Okay.
Are you the next guy?
Are you the next guy? Moving down the list now. And then Disney took it back, and they're using it in a much more benign way. You know.
As far as you know.
Yeah, well, there you go.
All right, good. So this is where we're walking out. This is where they're going to put a gift shop.
Well, it's a retail opportunity.
Oh, retail opportunity. I apologize.
Yes. Okay.
Apologize.
What they're going to do is, in fact, it's wonderfully themed. They're going to basically, you're going to, where you see Blackbeard's crypt, you're now going to see the door blown open to Blackbeard's crypt. And you can walk in, and there will be coffins coming down through the ceiling.
That's what I think of. I think of buying opportunities when I see coffins.
What are we
teaching the children, Jim?
What we're teaching the children is, having just seen the amazing hitchhiking ghost effect, that, you know, never mind about a hitchhiking ghost following you home, you want to take it home.
Ah.
So there will be a counter where you can buy the film footage that you've just seen of yourself going through the ride, and you can take it home on basically a tablet-shaped picture frame. And, you know, that you can have it on your desk and, look how cool I am! So.
Oh, and it'll be a movie?
Yeah. About a 10 to 15 second loop.
Oh, that'd be great.
But, you know, in a wonderful Haunted Mansion specific frame. And if Disney has its way, you're going to see these sorts of, never mind about, you know, image capture, single photo, you know, this sort of video loop for attractions all over the parks. Cool.
We're gonna go start on Adventureland.
Sure.
Through.
Okay.
Adventureland it is. How's the we're walking past Hall of Presidents. How's the Obama thing going over for Hall of Presidents?
Well, you know, it's not nearly as polarizing this week.
Oh, good.
You
yeah,
know,
that's right.
You know,
post Bin Laden.
Yeah, it's. But again, you circle back on the issue that frankly this is the sort of show that look great on paper in the 1960s and 70s, but
when it was a different, simpler time?
Well, you know, the people were willing to sit down and watch a 20-minute long show. Now, you know, Disney is sort of staring down the gullet of the fact that when you're making people pay $70, $80, $90 a day to get into these parks, they want to max out. They want to get in as many rides as possible.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
you
know,
funny because they've seen that. Six Flags has seen that for years.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess Disney's crowd has been different.
Yeah. So what they're finding is that what people want are the intense 3.5-minute long experience. And yes, I know. Okay.
An intense 3.5-minute experience.
That's right.
Huh.
So, and you know, to be honest, given what you pay, you know, I don't think we can do any of these jokes.
No.
Okay.
We'll be editing all this out.
Okay. But the number they're looking at is that.
Right now they're getting it in about people. The average guest they said is getting in around 10 attractions.
There you go, 10. That's the magic number.
10.
You know, and of course they'd like to bump that number up, but it then means that you have to build people-eating attractions. You have to build mansions with Omni Movers or boat attractions like Pirates, and those are ridiculously expensive to build, and you know, very expensive to maintain. And
Yeah, I mean, everything's a capital investment. That's the thing.
Yeah.
But if you look at their financial numbers, they're still maintaining $2 billion a year in investment, capital investment for the next couple of years.
But at the same time, how much of that is going
into... Yeah, it's Disneyland, yeah.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, the amount of money that's being spent on Fantasyland, you can't dismiss it. I mean, they clearly are reinvesting, but the couple... That with the fact that, well, what's on the other side of that?
Yeah, what are you doing on the other side?
You know, but realistically, again, this is the number one part. When people come on vacation to Walt Disney World, they always go to the Magic Kingdom. So it makes most sense to throw your biggest dough at this.
Yeah.
But right behind that, then comes Epcot.
Yep.
And, you know, we've talked about what they're looking on doing about a fantasy land-sized project over there. That number keeps sliding back and forth between... $250 to $300 million, but it talks about changing out virtually the heart of that park, the stretch between the fountains,
yep,
all the way to those two gift shops.
So the back part of the walkway from the middle of Visual Plaza.
Yep.
Wow.
At the same time, though, that you know, the interesting thing is they had identified Odyssey as a potential location for a new attraction. There's been some pushback on that, mostly because Odyssey isn't just Odyssey, it's also a back-of-the-house area that they would have to move things to put in. But on the other hand, you know, they want to put a new land in Epcot. It's been, what, when did Norway go?
Norway, 88?
88. So they'd love to have something open, you know, soonish, but that's the reality.
They're still a couple of years away.
So,
oh, cool. What so we had a line for Swiss Family Treehouse not too long ago. It was a little scary.
Well, you know, the Stairmaster crowd, okay?
Exactly.
This is, again, another example of something that they brought from California with the thoughts of, okay, it's, you know, it's popular there, let's do it here. And
then they changed it in California.
Well, yeah. In fact...
this thing sucks. Let's do Tarzan.
Yeah. It's kind of fascinating. But again, what's interesting is that you didn't see one of these built for Paris... You know, in this way, you saw again.
They do the so in Paris they do swinging rope bridges, and actually I like the Adventureland in Paris quite a bit.
Oh no, it's a clever idea. And in fact, what's interesting is that as they are now working on Shanghai Disneyland, the Adventureland component right now is a giant pirates boat ride with, you know, a pirate's village around it that
and that'll be Adventureland?
It's obviously it's a franchise for the future for them, or so they believe. I mean, you know, we've got the script for Pirates 5 written, and, you know, the commitments all around to all the way out to Pirates 6.
Really?
It's just, again, nailing Mr. Depp's feet to the floor long enough to make the movies.
Yeah, I understand.
But yeah, so same thing here, that, you know, every so often there are different ideas floated about how can we fold more pirates into Walt Disney World. And I think the one that was scariest was the Tiki Room redo.
To pirates?
Well, love this,
okay?
Oh,
dear God.
The notion is that every good pirate has a parrot.
Every good pirate, okay, a tenuous link, but okay.
Okay,
work with
that. And so the notion is that, all right, so what if Tiki Room got rethemed as in, this is where Jack Sparrow, in fact, that was the thing, they had to do a movie where Jack had a parrot.
Does he have a parrot in 4?
Well, no, he doesn't.
So much for that.
But there was the gentleman who didn't speak in the first 3 parts.
Oh, yeah, Mr.
See, that's a problem. I know the name of the parrot, but you know. But anyway, the idea was that because
Jack interviews him, right?
That's it, exactly. But what ends up happening is that if they redid the Tiki Room as the place where the pirates go to get parrots, and so it's literally a parrot showroom, and the show is now rethemed around, they sing sea shanties, and, you know, seriously,
that's a great idea.
Well... But the problem is that it then means that you have to tear down the theming of the, you know, the property.
No, because they could tie it into a franchise, right? Weren't they in Thailand, Hong Kong, Singapore? Singapore in Pirates 2, right?
There you go. There you go.
They just make it Singapore.
But seriously, the idea is that in... But then the problem was the way it was scripted. There was a version of the show where you literally had a Jack Sparrow lookalike.
In the ride?
Well, I mean, in the queue area, as in he was the one who started the show, you know, okay, that sort of thing.
All right.
And then it was just the reality of, do we really want to pay that many people to be a face character?
Oh, that's right, because they'd be doing 15 shows a day.
And that coupled with the fact that you then have to share this money with Jerry Bruckheimer. You know, so it's like, okay, now we go with a generic pirate who sells to Jack Sparrow.
And
so it's there, it floats in there. I mean,
it's not a bad idea.
It's got merit, but at the same time, if you think about the venom that people have for under new management.
Yeah.
Which,
I mean, you've seen it once. I think the last time I saw it, I went like 5 years without seeing it. Then during Year of a Million Dreams, I got a private showing of it. Mm-hmm. That's what we won. That was our dream. I know. But whatever.
Years of therapy later.
Yeah, exactly. So then, I have a new appreciation for it. But the last couple times we've been on Disneyland, obviously we went and saw it. But
at the same time, again, that's a show from 1965. All right? And you know, again, the whole notion... In fact, they cut the Offenbach number out of the show because people were getting up and leaving.
Their attention spans aren't long enough.
No, I mean, and that's exactly... People are not willing to sit still for 20 minutes to watch, you know... In fact, you know, the irony of you can go to Toys R Us and get, you know, a robotic figure that has more lifelike action now than any of the birds in there. But again, to hear the Disney purists, it's like, oh, Walt designed it. We must keep it forever.
Exactly. You know? It's like you're desecrating the temple. So we're now walking across from Tiki Room to Jungle Cruise.
And continuing our theme of the day, the whole ADA loading people in wheelchairs and electric carts on. One of the projects that's on the board for right here is a separate boat dock and a separate launch that will actually be used to handle the wheelchair customers. Be built approximately in the gaming area over here.
Oh, by Shrunken Ned's?
Yep.
I love Shrunken Ned's.
It's, you know, it's charming, but again, you know, that if they could make it that much easier to load and load people off.
That's true.
The money that's made here, they'll get back in other ways. But...
Yeah, Shrunken Ned's went up to like $2 now, didn't it?
Well...
I can't believe
again,
it.
Again, you know, Iger's got... You gotta remember, you know, Joy, you know, or excuse me, Willow... is Iger's second wife. You know, Mr. Iger's got to make a few payments. Okay. The other thing that's going to go on here with Jungle Cruise is you've got, after years and years and years of 1970s, 1960s type technology, you're finally going to see some new thrills folded in here. My favorite is the hippo attack. This is actually something that Marty Sklar proposed, and it's sad he's out of the company now. He's been doing his sort of Disney legend thing, but they're finally going to do it. That you're going to enter the hippo pool, which all of us have been yawning as wide as the hippos in for 3 years. Only now they're going to put a system of air bladders below the surface, so you are, you know, actually now going to be attacked by the hippos. The boat is going to be rocked.
So as the boat goes over the air bladders, they're going to inflate.
That's right. And so thump thump, you get knocked from side to side.
Nice.
They do have to do some tests in regard to, because again, this is a track attraction. I mean, you are tethered by two pieces of rope.
Oh, right, right.
And you know, it's just, it's very enjoyable to be hit by the hippos until they knock you off the track and your boat, you know, then free
flounders.
That's right. So, you know.
You stay there for 3 days.
You know, and it's, on the other hand, you know, going down, everyone gets to do their Leo DiCaprio impression. I'll never forget your rose. Don't let the hippo eat me. But yeah, that they're going to be amping up the effects. Some of the stuff from Disneyland will also be coming here that was added. For example, the gorillas get a hold of weaponry and dynamite. And so water exploding all around you. Likewise, the piranha pool. But the hippo...
Oh, the water exploding thing, that'd be good.
Yep. So, but at the same time, it would be programmable. So obviously during January, February, when... One does not want to get wet. Okay. It gets dialed down.
You notice they we'll get over there. We'll walk over to it. But you see that they've redone the water cannon for Splash Mountain as well.
Yeah. But again, same deal. It's just the whole notion of people say they want to get wet. The reality is they don't.
No, nobody wants to get wet.
So, but
okay. That'll be a good thing for Jungle Cruise.
Okay.
Is there anything going on with Magic Carpets of Aladdin?
Despite the rumors for the web, this is not being harvested and brought over to...
Dumbo?
Yeah, the Storybook Circus.
Oh, this is, please. The amount of money they're spending, no one would think that they're gonna harvest that. They should just buy another one. It's an off-the-shelf ride.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, but more to the point, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you know, we're standing here, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and, you know, look at that line. You know, this is just something... You know, I think that's another thing that is often frustrating about the hardcore Disney fans who seem to insist that everything is an e-ticket without animatronics. And the reality is, this is a park where you service all sorts of needs. And, you know, if you look at all the families with young kids in that line, this is enjoyable. Yeah. Not the hour-long standing in line to get on the ride, but the spinning.
It's not bad.
But no.
Are they doing anything with the retail area back here?
Funny you say that. I don't know if you've heard about the Broadway version of Aladdin that's in the works.
I've heard, yes.
Okay, it's going to be trying out in Seattle this summer. In fact, this week they announced something pretty cool. The actor who voiced Jafar, Jonathan Freeman, is actually coming back to the play to play Jafar.
Wow.
So.
Oh, he's typecast.
Well, no, he's actually been...
He's okay with it?
Well, you know, he's been playing in New York. He's been in Mary Poppins for about 2 years now.
Yeah.
Plays Mr. Banks and the chairman of the board. So as part of this, because now you're looking at Aladdin as possibly a Broadway show. It's actually being done by the guys who did The Drowsy Chaperone and Elf. And so as kind of a ripple effect out from that... they're talking about a brand new retail program for Aladdin.
Retail program?
Well, you know, just the Jasmine is among the top five selling in regard to the Disney princesses.
Imagine what that ranking is like. It's like the Apple in Paris in the Odyssey.
Well,
the Iliad. I mean, which princess is the fairest? Who makes the most money?
Well, you know, it's strange that Tangled. Coke would be great. You know, it's always a situation of you have your initial sales, and then, you know, things settle down to, you know, 2 or 3 years after the film comes out, you get a sense of what the lasting power is. And Jasmine has always been huge. So the notion is that again, they feel over here there are retail opportunities that are being missed. And
character retail. Because right now most of the stuff on the front end of Adventureland is sort of like surfwear and beachwear and stuff. It's not character oriented. You can get character stuff in there, but it's not specifically character oriented.
Well, but again, we now get into that turf of, okay, what does Adventureland at Disney World's Magic Kingdom really mean now? I mean, again, you've got Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, 4 about to go into theaters.
Yep.
You heard about the test of the Tortuga Tavern, right?
I love the idea of Tortuga Tavern.
I mean, they physically set it up as a test at Port Orleans. I mean, you walked in. In fact, Bougainville. I forget the name of the restaurant that's right off the lobby there.
Oh,
that's
the boat rides.
It's their sit-down restaurant, not the food court. The one that's been closed for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
This is now their test facility. They literally, you know, if they're going to do a new dining experience, behind, you know, that's where they take the executives. And they did this amazing, you know, Captain Jack Sparrow-themed dinner that everyone just raved about. But it was just the whole notion of, and we want to put it in the kingdom. We want to put it in, you know, the old Tahitian Terrace setup. And it's like, but we don't have a kitchen back there. I mean, it's set up strictly as quick service.
So would they put it over by Swiss Family Trails, or they do it over here by Pirates?
Well, you know, that's what's interesting is you've seen a little... You know, they spent so much money on the development, they just didn't want to walk away from it, which is why you have the retheming of the seasonal Tortuga Tavern thing down here.
Yeah.
Because, again, you put that much... You know, you spend that much money, you want to get something out of it.
Right.
But it's just the whole notion of... This isn't just, you know, retheme a building. This is, we got to build a kitchen. And you got to commit, you know, and again, there was some hesitancy within the company because there was
when this was all going on, there was no Pirates 4 in the works.
Right.
Now that we're talking, you know, there's a script for Pirates 5 and people are committed to Pirates 6, it's like, okay, we'll go back and look at this idea. And supposedly, that's a lot of what Tortuga Tavern is about. You know, if we create a Pirates-themed food opportunity,
yeah.
you know, and people come, you know, what could we do?
And if they're doing, if they're releasing a film every 2 years, I mean, then they've got, it's interesting because with Pirates, I mean, they could expand that franchise out much farther than they could, like Harry Potter, because Harry Potter's done, right? We're done with Harry Potter. Pirates, you could, 15 years from now, we could be saying, you know, it's Jack Sparrow's retirement.
It's so funny you say that. I was, I forget the name of the executive at Warner Brothers. But about 2 years ago, and again, this is the woman who's in charge of Harry Potter at Warner's, and she announces, you know, that they're two films away from being done. Well, I'm going to step away. I'm going to find other things to do. And it's like, are you crazy? You're behind the biggest money making, you know, franchise in the history of Hollywood, and why? She was the only one who recognized the train is pulling into the station. That, you know, yes, we have 300 people who work here at Warner's on Harry Potter, but once the movies are over, that drops down to like 30 people who are in charge of, you know, okay, t-shirt sales, you know, let's do another DVD set, that sort of thing. Yeah. She transitioned over to doing DC Comics. She's the one who's in charge of, you know, their Green Lantern movie, the reboot of Superman and Batman, that sort of thing. It's the same thing at Disney. I mean, Jerry Bruckheimer... after, you know, it really isn't a surprise that on the heels of Sorcerer's Apprentice kind of underperforming, and...
I went and saw that in theaters. I paid valid American currency to
see
that
film. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I know. Nicolas Cage owes me a personal apology.
Well, you know...
The good news is not enough people saw it. He could actually do the personal apologies.
Well, you know, but the interesting thing is, like, you look at, you know, that movie, and Alfred Molina got the job in that movie because of the job he did in Prince of Persia. Jerry Bruckheimer liked him so much personally. There's like, come be in a new movie. And it's like, oh, great. So you get off of the Titanic and get on the Hindenburg.
Yeah.
You know?
Prince of Persia, that's right. That underperformed too, didn't it?
Absolutely. And again, had that gone the way it was supposed to go, we would be sitting here now in the...
Oh, totally good on Persia thing here.
Yes, I mean, you know, but that's the way it goes. That, you know, Pirates has now showed that it has legs.
Yep.
And... so now it's like, okay, where to bring this into the parks? And obviously Adventureland at the Magic Kingdom makes the most sense, but it's like you have to make some really, really tough calls. And but at the same time, when you think about how many empty buildings we just walked by coming in here.
It's true.
You know,
pretty much everything to the right of Swiss Family Treehouse.
So, you know, but again, from the operational side of things, they like keeping those buildings empty and in reserve because during Easter and during Christmas, you can blow open those doors, you can bring in food that they've actually prepped for Liberty Tavern.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about it, it's the same thing they're doing now with the Diamond Horseshoe. I mean, that's literally just sort of being kept as...
extra space.
That's,
extra dining space.
Yeah, you know, it's a theme park equivalent of a fire extinguisher that you don't need to use it all the time. But when you need, you know, when you have 60, 70,000 people in this park, you know, over the holidays, and they want to eat.
Yeah, they've got to do, you've got to do the Diamond Horseshoe, you've got to do, so would the Adventureland thing share the same kitchen as Liberty Tree, or it's too far apart?
Well, that's the problem. You, in order to do that.
No, it's
no. So they need their own separate kitchen, or you need to literally redesign that entire back space, which, don't get me wrong, you know, I mean, the fact that they had to throw those bridges in there to, I mean, this has always been a kind of a weird swampy area in the park anyway, because it's just sort of like, when people need to cross, I mean, that's why they threw that access bridge there.
Yep.
It's just to get people, you know, during parade time and that sort of thing. I mean, again, I hate to keep circling back to this issue, but so many theme park fans don't understand. I mean, they love the rides, shows, the attraction, but they don't understand how this place runs, that they are people-eating machines. And, you know, that coupled with, I mean, for example, Main Street in this park. You walk in, and, you know, that's, yes, you see Main Street. What the people who run the park see is a retail corridor.
Yeah.
All right? And... what's interesting is the retail corridor keys off of retail beliefs from the 1960s and 1970s.
Which is?
Well, for example, you walk in, oh, I need money.
All right, so think about it. The bank used to be right there on the right.
Yep.
Okay, and oh, hey, I'm going into the park. I need film. So the camera shop was on the right. And oh, it's really sunny today. I need a hat. Okay, and now in the age of digital cameras and credit cards, it's just.
Need those things.
Yeah, so.
That's a bakery because you're hungry because you skip breakfast.
There you go. No, that's it exactly.
Exactly.
All right, so, you know, it just. So that's trying to take theme parks that were designed in the 60s and 70s and make them work for guests of 2011, 2012, 2013.
That's great.
And it's tough. I mean, when you think about when you stand in line now, and it's like this highly themed line that somebody spent years designing, and how many people around you are texting?
They're throwing their cell phones, they're checking Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just that, you know, so...
Yeah, kids these days, they don't know for nothing.
Well, but then the argument is, if you're working on an attraction, and it's like, okay, how much money are you going to budget for the queue? When a third of your audience isn't going to be looking at it. Wouldn't it make more sense to put that
25% of our budget's going to go to cell phone jammers.
Yes!
And the rest is going to go to art.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, that's the hard reality, that you... These parks, or the... Given that the people in these parks are changing, it's like my favorite. Well, we talked about it. It's the Space Mountain change out.
Yeah.
All right. The reality is that the old Space Mountain car was just too small and too tight for the ever growing American ass. And you know, this is a ride. Is it here that it's sponsored by Honda, or is it? Well, they're Disneyland.
Disneyland.
Okay. So you know that. The Imagineer was working on it. We need a big comfy seat for this car. And it's like, well, I know where the Raiders one. It's out in my Nissan. You know? And you can't tell the guys at, you know, Honda that we did this. But yeah, that's what they did. They had to increase the size of the seat to accommodate the fact that the American butt is that much larger. And, you know, couple that with the fact that the American attention span is so much shorter.
Yeah.
It's a strange situation.
You've got a comfortable... It's a 3.5 minute ride in your Barca lounge. That's exactly what it is.
That's right.
This is the perfect theme park ride. It's got no queue. It's 3.5 minutes long, and it's in a Lazy Boy.
Mm. Shall we walk? Let's go look up. Sure. See what's going on with Pirates.
Okay.
So Pirates is one of my top three favorite attractions of all time. By the way,
no,
Splash is number one. So, what's going on with Pirates?
Well, in the great scheme of things, much the same as. Haunted Mansion just got an interactive queue, and Winnie the Pooh. We're looking at Pirates. We're looking at the left-hand side of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes, we're standing in front of the entrance right now, Pirates. So, you can hear the sort of the background music from the movies.
But in the tradition of Haunted Mansion, there will be the fast way to get to the boat and the fun way to get to the boat.
Oh, they're going to do left and right lines?
Yep. So on the left, you will be... there was a plan in place where literally... You were going through what's left of the set of booby traps that the people who were barring you from getting the town.
Nice.
Of course, the problem with that scenario is, well, what about those people on the right? They just seem to be going straight in. So it's like, all right, we need a different story idea. So they're looking at now that, you know, Jack Sparrow has doubled back here to the effect of, look,
right.
I went through, I know there's a treasure. All right, I just wasn't able to find it my first time through. Could you help me?
Oh, clever.
So, yeah. So it's literally the idea that you could get a twofer. You could get people to ride the ride, and then, you know, there would be an audio cue or that sort of thing at the end of the ride to the effect of, oh, we didn't get all the treasure. We'll have to go back. And so now you take the left line, which has all of these interactive elements, and then supposedly,
would they know who got in the left line and the right line?
Well,
because if they changed the audio so that you got in the right line, that would totally make sense.
Well, this is where the interesting thing is everyone talks about all the hands-on stuff.
Yeah,
we're about to get into handheld.
nice.
I mean, literally, you're going to be using your cell phone. You're going to be using. In fact, that's the thing. The notion of you're going to be able to program any handheld device that will. You and the ride can wave that will cue off, you know, that will make things happen.
That's cool.
I mean, there was an iteration of this, for example, where you were going to be able to capture your own ghost in the Haunted Mansion. They seemed to have backed away from that idea. On the other hand, here for Pirates, the notion of that magical box thingy. I mean, you have, right. You know, the Sparrow, and evidently the app you'll be able to download is you'll have your own compass like Jack Sparrow.
Cool. On an app.
Yeah. So the notion is that you're waving it around and, okay, the magic of the device tells me it's over here. Or is you're when you're on the ride, it's like, watch the compass for the magic moment. And so you'll be going through, and in a part where everyone else on the ride is looking over here, you'll look at your app and it's like, whoa, I'm supposed to be looking behind me, and a different AA figure will pop
up.
Nice. So, but the whole notion is that there's been resistance to this idea because, you know, what if you're the family that didn't bring your phone with you?
Then you still get the regular attraction, but then the regular attraction isn't enough.
See, that's it exactly.
I'm sorry. The ride that's the classic, yeah. Right? That inspired the an entire genre of theme park rides. It's just not good enough anymore.
No, that's it exactly.
I didn't bring my cell phone.
And in fact, we come back again to the issue of skyboxing. That the people who are willing to pay for these things are the people who have the right cell phone.
Yeah.
Versus the I'm sorry, you don't have 4Gs, you can't do this.
You're on.
Yeah, you have the wrong cell program.
It's not a smartphone. It's just a regular phone.
No, that's it exactly. You're
a Nokia. Yeah. You're the Betamax of cell phones.
Yeah, and it's just sort of like there's a reluctance on certain parts of Disney management. It's like, look, they're paying $80-$90 a day to get in here, and we're going to tell them, oh, by the way, you're not good enough. Yeah. You've paid all this money. And
it's just another $50 more.
Oh, you could have had the really good experience.
Yeah.
So,
that's a shame. Well, hopefully they can work something out there.
But again, once they, it's just one of these things where they're waiting for the point where the technology has the breakthrough, where enough of the cell phones have commonality. It's like, okay, now we do
HTML 5. That's what we're waiting for. All right, so we're walking now from Adventureland into Frontierland.
All right, well, speaking of
Cerulean. So you can hear the screams of small children as they're eating. Oh, wait, that's Splash Mountain. Never mind. wrong attraction.
Well, we were talking about this earlier today, that this is the new improved Splash Mountain with the less of a splash.
Yeah, so so they've changed the water cannon so it doesn't splash the riders as much. Right before you go up the big lift hill, the water cannon used to soak you as a boat came down the flume. Now it doesn't shoot off as much.
In fact, to be specific, it's now a mist cannon.
It's a mist cannon.
The idea is it looks great to photograph, but it's not throwing any real water down.
Okay.
So, but again, just one of these things where operationally you learn the hard way that people say they want to get splashed,
but they don't actually want to get splashed.
No, look at it now. See?
Oh yeah, look. Yeah. But they've got the water cannon, so it just barely falls a little bit on the right hand side of the boat. Mm-hmm. Well done. The attraction looks pretty good though. It's still is a mist cannon.
Yeah.
It's a mist cannon. You're right. Mm-hmm. Look at that.
But at the same time, again, you don't get grumpy people, and grumpy people don't buy photos at the end. All right.
It sucked. I don't want a picture of it. Yeah, exactly.
So,
it looks good. The attraction looks good.
No, again, they're getting better about the general upkeep of the park. For example, I think one of the things I enjoyed most about this recent redo of the Haunted Mansion is they repainted the brickwork on the outside. It's subtle, but it's back to being a Hudson Valley mansion.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of interesting. The Shanghai Disneyland Pirates is going to be a flume ride much like this.
Really?
It's the notion of...
You could totally retheme Splash to be Pirates.
Well, the first iteration of this, and of course now that we're four films in, this doesn't make much sense, but the original iteration was at the Splash Point, the drop-down Chicopee Hill. You were literally, your vehicle came up between Johnny Depp's Jack Sparrow and Captain Barbossa, and they were sword fighting. And only when they jerked their arms back from fighting could your vehicle drop. But the notion is you're looking at them, and you don't realize you're hitting the drop point.
It's not a good photo op. Everyone's looking up.
So it'll be interesting to see whether or not they revisit that now with the Blackbeard character. It's a Pirates flume ride, but I a Pirates to the movie themed flume ride.
Yeah.
It's just these days, particularly at the Walt Disney Company, it's just so rare that they do any sort of new ride, show, or attraction that isn't tied to a brand or a franchise. You think about it. These days, Could you get a Big Thunder all by itself pushed through?
No, it has to be him.
Yeah. In fact, you know, in fact, we talked about this for an earlier guide. In fact, now that Disney is once again serious about full, you know, finally doing Lone Ranger, it's supposed to be Bruckheimer's next big production for the company with Depp as Tonto, but they're talking about doing an overlay featuring the Lone Ranger characters.
In Big Thunder.
In Big Thunder. Huh. I mean, the whole notion is that you'd have a photo op here in this area with the Lone Ranger and Tonto. That coupled with, there'd be, you know, a re-theme where you'd get that the iconic William Tell Overture music at several points. But yeah, that's still in the pipeline. But again, as we were talking earlier about Prince of Persia or, you know, Sorcerer's Apprentice, that you can talk a good game, but if the movie doesn't make any money, you know, why would you want that in the theme park?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if it's a one and done film.
Yeah. So.
So what are they going to wait to see how the film performs? And just like Pirates.
Well.
Somewhere north of $2 billion, they figure they could do something with it.
That's where it gets kind of interesting. Lassiter.
Oh, new map for Tom Sawyer Island. Look at that. Oh, it's beautiful.
Oh, cool.
Very nice.
But no, I mean, Lassiter is actually pushed hard for the notion of attractions that would open with movies, or open in a six-month window with a movie. So the movie would come out, DVD hits, attraction opens. But, you know, again, the crapshoot of, you know, if that's the way we did business, it's like, oh, come on, kids, we're getting on the Black Cauldron ride.
Marjorie's mom's ride.
Yeah. I honestly am the only person in North America that sort of kind of liked that movie.
You saw it?
I saw it.
You saw the film?
I saw it.
You're the
movie.
Guy?
I'm that guy.
Huh.
You know? But
did they pay you to see it, or are you actually...
No, in fact, you know, the amazing thing is I went to a press screening in Raynham, Massachusetts, a theater full of moms and sons.
Yeah?
And everyone laughed, everybody enjoyed it. And I only afterward, and that's how we wrote the review. It's like, hey, it was an audience full of people who enjoyed it. And I only then occurred to me after the movie came out and died a dog's death. It's like, okay, so this is an audience full of mothers who dragged their children to the movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, he saves his mother. Oh, this is a wonderful film. Mom, can we go home? You know?
Yes, I'm laughing. Will I get it over with faster?
Yes, that's it exactly. That was the reaction. So it's like, you gotta understand. That's a hard lesson I learned. You gotta appreciate the audience you're watching a movie with.
Yes.
And did they pay? So. But anyway, now coming up on Country Bear.
Any plans here for any plans for retail space in Frontierland?
Well, again, you're talking about Lone Ranger. And where this gets interesting is that what they want to do, just to slow down for a sec, you'll notice we have all sorts of balconies here that are not being used.
Apartments. Real estate, that's where it's going
to
be.
More to the effect of you could stage a show here.
Didn't they used to have a show here?
Well, that's, you know, they've done dance, you know, country line dancing, that sort of thing in the street here.
Yeah.
But what they're talking about, it's a jumping off from the promotion that Disney did the summer of Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, where they had Indiana Jones do an elaborate fight sequence in and around the Adventureland veranda.
Right.
This same thing here, the notion is you would come here and the bank would be robbed. You'd have to designate which of these buildings is the bank, because conspicuously absent. But then along the rooftops, you would have the Lone Ranger and Tonto pursuing. They've come in, they've done the measurements, because that's the interesting thing is you have to have, okay, this is our performance space, where is our audience standing? And then it's like, okay, you're going to have an audience queue up here at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, in the Florida sun. Yes, and there you go.
So speaking of the sun, the thing that, as we're walking along here, the thing that I realized is, we're walking towards Liberty Square, mm-hmm. the entire left side of the park, of the walkway, which is in shade, mm-hmm. is completely occupied by merchandise carts.
Well.
Yeah. Coincidence?
You have to step
you want some? You want some shade? $3.50.
But at the same time, you know, if you look at, seriously, you have a walkway here which allows you to filter crowds who that aren't standing to watch your stage show.
Yep. But I know, it's perfect walkway. I mean, it's perfect setup.
And, you know, realistically, you could, you can move them along these five different buildings.
Yeah, you could totally do it.
But again, it keys off of, you know, how is the movie shaping up? In fact, that's, I'm actually developing a story about that right now, that there's, it's fascinating when they recruit employees to promote movies that aren't out yet.
We need you to look like the Lone Ranger. I haven't seen the Lone, what? The Lone what?
No, that's it, exactly. They for example, for Princess and the Frog, what they did, they sent the art to the casting people, and it's like, you know, for example, Dr. Facilier, get me a tall, skeletal black man, you know? I'm like, okay, and Bruce Smith, the animator, literally had this 5-minute long video explaining who the character was in art. This is the character art, this is how he acts, this is his big song, you know, because again, we have no movie to show you at this point, and this actually has to open before the movie opens.
It's like trying to bring a character to life based on a play, but based on an outline of a play.
No, that's exactly, so for example now, you know, the young lady who's playing Angelica, for Pirates 4 over at Adventureland. The
movie's not out yet.
Yeah, so it's like,
oh. Well, you know how Penelope Cruz is. She's stuck like her. You know, as a pirate. Come
that's
on.
It exactly. You know?
Oh. Wandering minstrels.
Runaway banjo.
Runaway. You know what every marching band needs is a tuba. That's, you know, his lips have to be fused to that thing, though, right now. That's going to be a little warm. The guys with the banjos are fine. The guy with the tuba, 90 degrees. Yeah, he's just huffing. That's actually his lungs. That's not the tuba.
But anyway, again, I guess, what I find fascinating about the way Disney operates now, particularly with these large projects like Tron Legacy, or, for example, again, coming out in, now we're 18 months out from The Great and Powerful Oz. They literally have what they refer to as speed teams. They have each of the 30 different divisions, and again, I can't wrap my head around this. Each of the 30 different divisions of the Walt Disney Company, they meet once a week. And it's like, what are we doing to push Oz forward? And it's like, okay, so we've met with the people in China and they're doing the t-shirts. And we've given the tentative costume sketches to the people who would be doing the things for the park.
It's a year and a half in advance.
Yep. And in fact, right now, they're in the middle of launching the Avengers campaign. I mean, you know, in fact, the initial teaser for it, it's actually been at a number of Comic Cons and car shows. They're recruiting people to join S.H.I.E.L.D., the organization that's, you know, the behind the Avengers. And it's much the same as the Flynn Live thing. It's just the whole notion of these things are ocean liners, and you have to, if you're going to make a big splash, you have to literally launch that early and get everything in place.
It's amazing.
So, yeah. So right now, again, Lone Ranger, they haven't shot a film, you know, a frame of film. You know, they've done some costume sketches, the script's written, but they're already in here measuring for the stunt show. I mean, it just, that amazes me.
I think that part of how the park operates eludes a lot of people. The fact that, you know, it's not like it's, you know, something shows up, you know, 2 weeks after somebody realizes that when a new attraction launches, it's the culmination of like five years of work.
Yeah, absolutely. And for example, honestly, if the Princess Tiana riverboat thing, if the movie Princess the Frog had been as entertaining as that show had been,
it's a good show.
It would have been a hit film. I mean, it was one of these things where it's like, you watch the show on the riverboat, it's like, I want to see that movie. I went to the movie theater, it's like, where the hell is the...
Give me a show.
It's like, I saw a really entertaining riverboat show. What the hell's with this boring movie? You know.
That's classic.
Yeah, but that is also the case with the parks, is that they can take the best possible moments.
It's true.
It's sort of like, again, with the Little Mermaid ride that's being built. You know, they literally took the greatest hits out of that film. And those are the scenes.
6.5 minutes, 5.5 minutes, depending on.
But again, the greatest hits. You're in the middle of Under the Sea. You're in Ursula's lair. You know, kiss the girl. It gets everything that, you know. And trust me, they nailed little girls to tables. It's like, what do we need to do from the Little Mermaid?
Tell me what you want to see, kid.
It's like, well, she's got to wave at the end. It's like, okay,
wait. What kind of songs? Okay, what part of the song?
Yeah.
What key? What key is Eric supposed to be in? I'm going to play 6 songs for you. I'm going to tell you which one's better. What's going on with Country Bear Jamboree?
Well, the reality is that they recognize that they have to do something. But we live in this age where people seem to want interactivity. And that coupled with we now, you know, again, American Idol, Glee, suddenly television shows about people singing and that sort of thing are that much more popular. It's like, well, we have this show where bears sing. We have to do something. So, and God help me, this really is the title. But, you know, and I don't know if it'll make it through committee, but it's American Idol.
American Idol.
American Idol. And, you know, the whole notion is you go in, it's the same EA figures. They'll be, but they'll swap out the audio. They've had conversations with Rascal Flatts. They've had conversations with Reba McEntire. The notion is that you bring in genuine country stars, but the gimmick is that they're all singing for a prize and then feeding off of much the same technology as from Haunted Mansion, which recognizes, you know, your face and pulls it out. This is going to be technology where if you really want them to win, raise your hand. And they'll do a quick vote as to who wins.
Nice.
And it'll be, literally, the show will be driven by who you decide wins. But yeah, that is making its way through committee. And, you know, but again, with Imagineers throwing themselves in front of that name, it's like, God, can we come up with something else? You know, just give me something else. Because particularly given that American Idol over at the studios is nowhere near the success they'd hoped.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It's a shame.
No, it is. It's a wonderful physical plant, and they did a beautiful job with it.
A lot of it. It's just like the show, though. If you've watched the show, there's, you know, in an hour show, there's like 9 minutes of singing.
Well, but there you go.
And that's what the show is, too. It's a 25-minute show. There's 6 minutes of singing.
But, you know, and the thing of they want, you know, and come back at 5 o'clock. It's like, look.
I'm good.
Yeah, that's I'm exactly. Good. So, but I don't know. It just, it there you hit another issue that did, you know, again, something that the Imagineers talk about all the time. It's like, you can't do a dairy product. You know, when you put something in a theme park, it's steel, it's concrete, it's wood, it's, and you can't build it around a film or a character that isn't going to be there, you know, in a year.
Yeah.